Jeremiah chapter 37. And for a change, we got a little bit of a short chapter. So things have changed in Jeremiah's life. Some names have changed, people in certain positions have changed, I should say. We'll see in a moment. Remember, Jeremiah was imprisoned by Jehoiakim. Is that right? Yeah, Jehoiakim, the king. There's so many kings that keep getting their names mixed up. But he was imprisoned by Jehoiakim. If you remember, part of the last chapter dealt with the death of Jehoiakim. So he's no longer king. And remember these kings. This is all taking place during the siege of Jerusalem by the Babylonian army, or the Chaldean army. We'll see he refers to the Chaldeans tonight and in Babylon both. But remember the land of the Chaldees is where Babylon is, the city of Babylon is, just a city-state. And that's where the king of Babylon is from. And so the city's still under siege, but there's been a change of kings within Jerusalem. There's also, reading up on this, we see where the king of Babylon pretty much dictates who the king of Jerusalem is. And you would think, the city being under siege, that Jerusalem hasn't been taken yet, but it has of sorts, but they haven't fully taken it. But the king, basically, he's powerless. He's just a puppet king, if you will, at this point. Now, let's start with verse 1. And King Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, reigned instead of Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, whom Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, made king in the land of Judah. So Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, remember, Jehoiakim was also the son of Josiah. They were brothers. So instead of Jehoiakim's son becoming king, the king of Babylon has appointed Zedekiah, his brother, instead, as the king. Doesn't tell us here why he did that, but it was at his discretion, and he did what he wanted. He was in power. Verse 2, but neither he nor his servants nor the people of the land did hearken unto the words of the Lord which he spake by the prophet Jeremiah. Now, in the past, in our study in this book, we've seen it different ways. We've seen it where sometimes the king listened to Jeremiah and the people didn't. Sometimes the people listened to Jeremiah and the king didn't. Back and forth. Sometimes both ways. Sometimes, you know, it was never the same. But here we see the king and the people are wicked and are not listening to the Lord. But we'll see in a moment where the king Zedekiah asked Jeremiah about the Lord. Why would he do that if he doesn't believe Jeremiah anyway? Well, obviously he knows Jeremiah is a man of God. And even though he wants Jeremiah to tell him what God has to say about certain things, he doesn't like what God has to say, and he doesn't abide by it anyway. So he kind of wastes his time even asking, but he does it anyway. Verse 3, and Zedekiah the king sent that's one of those that I pronounced it when I was studying this, and now I can't pronounce it. So, the son of Shelemiah, and Zephaniah the son of Maaseiah the priest to the prophet Jeremiah, saying, pray now unto the Lord our God for us. The king sends these men. These are, he says, this, at least this one is a son of the priest. In other words, these men are, if they're, if both the fathers are priests, is like I'm reading this, or like I'm understanding this, that would mean that these sons are in line to be priests at some point. That because the priest, even the, it was passed down from generation to generation. And so these men are next in line to be priests, possibly even priests in training at this point. Anyway, the king sends these men to Jeremiah, asking him to pray to God. So that tells us that King Zedekiah thinks that much of Jeremiah's position with God. He knows that Jeremiah has a direct line, if you will, with God, and is in constant contact with God. Verse 4, now Jeremiah came in and went out among the people, for they had not put him into prison. So he, remember the last chapter, last few chapters, Jeremiah was in prison, or he was under more like house arrest in the king's palace. Now he's out. This new king has freed him to, of sorts. He's not, he's still in the city of Jerusalem and not able to leave because of the siege that's going on. But he is, he is out of prison, no longer under arrest. Then Pharaoh's army was come forth out of Egypt, and when the Chaldeans that besieged Israel heard tidings of them, they departed from Jerusalem. Now, two things here: the we see Pharaoh's army, and if you read up on this, on the history of this, Josephus has some writings on this. There's another man that I couldn't pronounce his name that had some writings on this, and they both seem to say that Zedekiah had made an alliance with Pharaoh, and Pharaoh sent an army to help Jerusalem. Now, was his intentions good? Probably not. He was Pharaoh. He probably figured that, well, if I can beat the Chaldeans, then I'll take the spoils of Jerusalem myself. Remember, Egypt had been embarrassed many generations before by Israel, and they had not forgotten that. Egypt had not forgotten the past with Israel. Now, he says, and when the Chaldeans that besieged Jerusalem heard tidings of them, they departed from Jerusalem. Now, the commentaries say this doesn't mean that the Chaldeans gave up. This means they went out to fight. They left Jerusalem and went out to fight the Egyptians. And there's proof through history, through secular history, that there was a battle between Babylon, the army of Babylon, and the Egyptians. And the Egyptians were whipped and sent back to Egypt. And so the cry for help from Zedekiah did no good. Now let's go on and read. He talks a little bit more about this. And then came the word of the Lord unto the prophet Jeremiah, saying, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, thus shall ye say to the king of Judah that sent you unto me to inquire of him, behold, Pharaoh's army, which is come forth to help you, shall return to Egypt into their own land. Now, there's two different takes on this. One says that Egypt's army came basically, it's very vague, but tells that Egypt's army came and the Chaldeans beat them and they sent them back to their own land. Another story tells that at least part of, maybe all, maybe if not all of the Egyptian army came by ship to Jerusalem, across the, kind of cut across the corner of the Mediterranean, and came to Israel, or to Judah. And when they got to the shore, they saw things in the horizon that scared them. it wasn't really, it was like a mirage, if you will, or a dream or something. It was a vision, something that scared them. It doesn't really tell what it was, but that they saw this and it scared them and they left. That may have just been part of the army. I don't know, because it does tell that there was an actual battle. There's more than one reference to that. So they did physically fight. But also, notice there's no mention of Pharaoh going himself this time. I wonder if Pharaoh had learned his lesson from the Red Sea. Maybe it might be wiser for him to stay home so he doesn't get killed like his predecessor or like his forefather did. Anyway, the Egyptian army is sent back to their own land, to their homeland. And the Chaldeans shall come again and fight against this city and take it and burn it with fire. So God tells Jeremiah, just because they're gone for now, they're coming back. And remember, God promised them that the army of Babylon was going to destroy Jerusalem. It hasn't happened yet. That's what he's saying here. It hasn't happened yet. Don't think it's not going to happen, because it is. Thus saith the Lord, deceive not yourselves, saying the Chaldeans shall surely depart from us, for they shall not depart. For though ye have smitten the whole army of the Chaldeans that fight against you, and there remain but wounded men among them, yet should they rise up every man in his tent and burn this city with fire. God made a promise. It doesn't matter what happens, it's still going to happen. It doesn't matter what the king of Jerusalem does, it doesn't matter what the people do. He says they could whip the whole army of the Chaldeans, and all that would be left were the wounded, and they would still rise up and still destroy Jerusalem. That's a pretty blunt and straightforward, isn't it? God says it don't matter what's going to happen. It don't matter how. It could be one man. He's still going to come back. If, as long as he's part of the Babylonian army, he's going to come back and destroy you. It doesn't matter. God's made this promise, and it's going to happen. And that should be a lesson to us today. If God's made a promise, it's going to happen. Just like with our study in Revelation, the things we're studying. God's made promises. Those things are going to happen. Verse 11, and it came to pass that when the army of the Chaldeans was broken up from Jerusalem for fear of Pharaoh's army, then Jeremiah went forth out of Jerusalem to go into the land of Benjamin, to separate himself thence in the midst of the people. And when he was in the gate of Benjamin, a captain of the ward was there, whose name was Arijah, the son of Shemaiah, the son of Hananiah, and he took Jeremiah the prophet, saying, thou fallest away to the Chaldeans. Then said Jeremiah, it is false. I fall not away to the Chaldeans. But he hearkened not to him. So Arijah took Jeremiah and brought him to the princes. So while the Chaldean army is gone to fight Pharaoh's army, Jeremiah takes advantage of the situation, leaves the city, and goes to the land of Benjamin. I'd have to go back and look, but if I remember right, I think his homeland was the city he was from was in the land of Benjamin. Anyway, he goes back there. Doesn't say why, but he does. And the guard of the city stops him. He says, where are you going? They're accusing him of siding with the Chaldeans. They're accusing him of fleeing the city of Jerusalem and going to the Chaldeans as a spy. They're accusing him of treason here. But Jeremiah says it's false. He says, that's not where I'm going. Verse 15. And of course, the guard turns him over to the princes of the city. And wherefore the princes were wroth with Jeremiah and smote him and put him in prison in the house of Jonathan the scribe, for they had made that the prison. So this house of Jonathan, some say that this man Jonathan was a similar to what we consider a Secretary of State. He was in the cabinet of the king's cabinet, and anyway, it had never been done this way before, but they were using his house or part of his house as a prison to hold political prisoners. When Jeremiah was entered into the dungeon and into the cabins, and Jeremiah had remained there many days, then Zedekiah the king sent and took him out, and the king asked him secretly in his house and said, "Is there any word from the Lord?" And Jeremiah said, "There is. For said he, thou shalt be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon." Not what the king wanted to hear, is it? That's not... The king was hoping for good news. This is not very good news. Moreover, Jeremiah said unto the king Zedekiah, "What have I offended against thee, or against thy servants, or against this people that ye have put me in prison?" Jeremiah is still pleading his case. He's in prison wrongly. He's been accused wrongly. Matter of fact, it looks as though he's been imprisoned without a trial. He was brought before the princes, so maybe there was some type of trial, but it was not according to the law. So he just asked, he tells the king, gives the king his answer for what the Lord has to say about things. And then he asked the king, "What have I done? Why am I in prison? What have I done to you or the people?" 19, "Where are now your prophets?" This is Jeremiah's continuing to question the king. Where are your prophets, which prophesied unto you, saying the king of Babylon shall not come against you, nor against this land? Remember those false prophets? We've seen them all through this book. They were constantly telling the kings that this was all a lie, that Babylon was not coming. There was not, God wouldn't do this to his people. You know, we hear that today, don't we? You know, why would God cause something bad to happen to his people? Well, it might be the sins of the people. Might be why God sends the bad. That's what he did with Jerusalem, with Israel and Judah. He brought the army of Babylon against them because of their sin. Verse 20, "Therefore, hear now, I pray thee, O my Lord the King, let my supplication, I pray thee, be accepted before thee, that thou cause me not to return to the house of Jonathan the scribe, lest I die there." This house of Jonathan was not a good place. If you notice back in verse 15, the princes smote him while he was there. They beat him. And this prison, this, like I said, was a political place for political prisoners. Notice back in 16, it had a dungeon. And this cabins, or cells, if you will, were... it was not a good place, not a healthy place. So he asked the king not to send him back. Then Zedekiah the king commanded that they should commit Jeremiah into the court of the prison, and that they should give him daily a piece of bread out of the baker's street until all the bread in the city were spent. Thus Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. So the king commands that Jeremiah be put in the court of the prison. In other words, many of the houses of the wealthy, and especially politicians in that day, had a courtyard. And so that's where Jeremiah would have been kept. It would have been out in the open. He'd have been able to walk around. And some say that he would have even been able to receive visitors. People, friends and family could have come see him if they wanted. He couldn't leave. He was still in prison. But he was... again, it's similar to what he had before. It's kind of like house arrest. He was able to move about, not in a cell like he was at first, but have more freedom. And it says, the king said, give him daily a piece of bread out of the baker's street. Some say that this baker's street, there would have been a street in Jerusalem where all the bakers, where all their businesses were. And possibly even these would have been the best of the bakers. This would have been the ones who supplied the king with his bread. And it says, until all the bread in the city were spent. In other words, until all the bread was gone. He was to continue, as long as there was bread in the city, he was to continue getting a piece of bread every day. And this wouldn't have been just a piece of bread. This would have been a loaf. Well, we would think it was a loaf. It had been enough to sustain for the full day's meals. So Jeremiah remains in the court of the prison for now. We'll stop there for tonight, and we'll pick up with chapter 38 next time.